Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Thursday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny on The Fan. We are giving away Caps tickets today at 4 o'clock ahead of the Beltway Blitz. And at 6 o'clock, we'll talk to the Birdman, Ian Eagle of CBS, who will be on the call of Commanders Panthers with our buddy Charles Davis this weekend at Northwest Stadium. What's up, Danny?
Hey, buddy. Full-fledged fall, 39 degrees this morning as I'm walking the kids to school. That's bundle-up time.
That's the way we like it.
Hands were cold. So was the top of my head. Put a little hat on there. Totally fine. We made it through. It's okay. Nobody sweat. Nobody sweated? No one was sweating?
There was no perspiration.
Yeah, no perspiration, but no one sweated. Is that the right? Would you say that?
Nobody broke a sweat?
Yeah, no one broke a sweat.
What I do is, when I'm not sure, I don't learn. I just make it
you
more
work around. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm a big workarounder.
So sweat versus sweated, I don't know what to do there.
Yeah, I did that in Spanish class, where it was like, you can't speak normally. I got to do this one workaround to get to the one way I know how to say the verb.
I definitely did that in Spanish class. That and using a lot of websites that translate things for you.
Indeed, like hold it up.
Right. I actually saw a story that a family, these parents, were suing a school because their kid got in trouble, or the allegation was that he cheated and he used some AI website. I wonder what is going on at high school and college levels now with all of the AI stuff that you could do. Because I don't know how to use any of it, but if I was a student, I might know how to use some.
I'd learn real quick. I mean, for us, we called them the Clavens, but the Cliff Notes, right?
So, what was your website?
We didn't have one. Think about that. Like, that the web was like two dudes at an Earthlink site where you could go like, welcome to Dave's page, and like a guy with a thumbs up.
When
like,
did you graduate high school?
97.
Wow.
So we didn't have, I mean, there was the internet existed, but it
barely.
Wasn't like, yeah, but it wasn't like the resource that it is now.
You were dialing up.
Oh, yeah. Just hoping for a picture of Alyssa Milano. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't get much.
2006, when I graduated high school, the site was called Spark Notes. And there's a lot of people my age nodding their
people
head.
People know the Spark Notes.
Because by the time I was there, it was still early on in the game. But there were some classes that came before you that were reading the same books as you. So anything that you were assigned, you could punch the title in, and basically it was just detailed summaries of each chapter. And instead of reading the 15 pages, let's say, you might have to read four paragraphs or whatever.
Yeah. So I utilized the Cliff Notes, which were hard copies, those yellow books. For every 5 pages of real book, it was usually about 3/4 of a page. That was your ratio. So for some of them, I would actually read it, which is very rare. But like when it's Canterbury Tales time from Chaucer, when it's not even English, let's go to the cliffs. You know what I mean? When Shakespeare's like telling me stuff and there's 900 metaphors and it's like, is that a tree? Or is that like somebody's soul that became the tree and it's rebirth because it's springtime? Let's go to the Cliff Notes.
But as a show, our stance is, kids, do your work. We don't believe in shortcuts on this show. We believe, now that we got through it with shortcuts, that you walk the furthest way possible.
Yeah. Do the hard stuff. Do it.
It was just a different time back then.
Yes, it was.
We went to school 5 days a week.
Oh, there was so much going to school.
You remember all the school days?
We went to so much more school than them.
If it didn't snow,
yeah,
we were in school. That was basically how it went.
Well, the bit at old the St. Albans School for Boys in Northwest Washington, D.C., they took great pride in this, which I actually happened to find a little outrageous, just as a quick side item. The mantra of the old head of school was, the only thing open in D.C. is St. Albans and the jail. Like, that was a bit like, we stay open.
We do it.
That's nice, but it's actually dangerous on these roads coming from Northern Virginia.
Public school Peter over here.
Yeah.
Just a little engine who could, riding our yellow buses to and from.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of days off in the winter.
Get them snow days.
If the snow was present and or in the forecast, there's a good chance we might have a two-hour delay.
Huddle around that radio.
But otherwise, if it wasn't snowing, is it a Monday? Or is it a Friday? Or is it any day in between? If the answer is yes, we will be in the classroom.
Go to that school.
The good old days. All right, let's get after it on Grant and Danny today. As we told you, Caps tickets to give you at 4. Fired up to talk to Ian Eagle. I've been catching up with our guy, Charles Davis, who he works with from CBS on the phone the last couple of days. Good to have them come into town. They're flying in. They'll be out at practice on Friday. Maybe we'll see them tomorrow. I think I'm going to swing by the park because it is 15 minutes away from where we're broadcasting.
I was going to say, like, we're not going to be close to there. Oh, yes, we are.
We will be in Leesburg at Spanky's Shenanigans tomorrow.
Oh, indeed.
So if you want to watch or take part in or heckle us during the show, you can come on out. 2 to 6:30 on the Fan. We will be live at Spanky's in Leesburg. But I think I'm going to make a pit stop at the park and go see those guys and go check out practice and get in the locker room and see what I can find out. So that should be a lot of fun tomorrow here on Grant and Danny. But did you see the news of the morning? A congratulations is in order. Ladies and gentlemen of the nation's capital, Jaden Daniels, for the fifth time in 6 weeks, has been named the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Week.
Weird. Huh.
It's funny because someone, one of the fan accounts, had tweeted out a few days ago like a side-by-side of Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels' numbers from this past week. And they're like, obviously Daniels will win Rookie of the Week. And Darius and I were looking at it, and we're like, this doesn't make any sense.
It's not that obvious.
Caleb Williams had 4 touchdowns and 4 incompletions that weren't batted at the line. He might get one. Not to mention he hasn't won one yet. Now, what I honestly didn't know, and I'll just raise my hand and plead ignorance here, I didn't realize this is a fan vote. I thought this was actually something that the league picks, and they actually go over, pour over the numbers and the performance and pick it each week. I didn't realize it's just a popularity contest, basically. So Daniels, who played a hell of a game, I'm on record. I'm saying right now, listen to me loud and clear, this is the second most impressive game he's played, in my opinion, behind the Bengals game. I actually really, really liked the way he played, and he is deserving of any award he gets. I was very surprised that Caleb Williams didn't win it, though, and it's very obvious, Commanders fans, you guys got the vote out.
Yeah, and our guy's more popular than their guy, which is fine by me. Now, if I had a vote, you know what I mean? Like, if it was like a real thing, voting, not just popularity.
You do have a vote.
I would have given it to Caleb Williams this week. He was splendid in that game for that, and he earned it. But that doesn't take away from Daniels' performance, but Caleb Williams was awesome. But it's fun that everyone likes our guy.
Yeah.
Everybody's in, and he just keeps playing well. Each week, there's some new impressive feat or new impressive thing, a new little stone to unturn, and you go, oh, wow, that's awesome. We have that in the bag, too. Everybody, please be jealous of us.
Our guy is the popular guy.
Yeah.
It's a really fun place to be, and I haven't been here in a while. I'm not really sure where to park or what to do with my hands or where I'm supposed to go, but I can get used to sitting here for sure. So that means 5 out of 6 now for Jaden Daniels. The only game he did not win Rookie of the Week for offensively was Week 2. They played the Giants, and he had a really good second half in that game, if you remember. They narrowly beat New York. Didn't have a great first half. I think he got sacked 4 or 5 times. But Braylon Allen had a big game for the Jets. Caught a touchdown, rushed for a touchdown, and he won Rookie of the Week. But otherwise, I posted this on Twitter at Grant H. Paulson. It's like one of these is not like the other. This is just a Spider-Man meme with a bunch of Spider-Men pointing at each other. The winners, weeks 1 through 6, Daniels, Allen, Daniels, 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 Daniels.
Daniels.
Commanders fans, Daniels. Don't need political ads to get the vote out, my guy. They are stuffing the ballot box in week 6. So even if you throw 4 touchdowns, Caleb Williams, even if you have a career day.
Could you have thrown 5, though, buddy?
You're not going to win Rookie of the Week.
Mm-mm-mm.
Not up in here.
That's because number 5 plays in burgundy. And that's not really burgundy. It's kind of like this new USC sort of alternate red.
Yeah, the color that they chose that's kind of like burgundy.
Yeah. It's like, am I watching Arizona State or Washington?
These new uniforms are growing on me as they're winning.
Dude, that's the plan.
I just wanted to irritate you.
That's the plan.
Bit.
No, it doesn't. I don't care. It's the uniform itself doesn't bother me because, as you know, uniforms, they're all fine. Everyone should stop complaining about them.
Here's why I think it's such an easy fix. Go back to the old uniforms and take anything that says Redskins off and put Washington on, and there you go. Boom, you've got awesome uniforms.
Pretty simple. The part to me that I care about is the betrayal. Like, I can't, like, you, I was told, we were all told, it's going to be X and it's not X. That's the part I can't get over, but maybe I'm just a weirdo. I'm sure I'm the weirdo.
I need you to think less about that.
Okay.
And more about 4-2 and on your way to 5-2.
Yeah, it's fun.
Can I get you to do that?
I'm in. Let's go.
4-2 on your way to 5-2.
Who's first place in the NFCs right now?
That would be Washington.
There you go. What record?
That's 4-2.
Who do they have this weekend?
The lowly Carolina Panthers.
Short favorite, big favorite?
Pretty big favorite.
Let's go.
I saw Deontay Johnson was not practicing. He is one of the only scary players on that Carolina offense. They're one of these teams that ranks poorly in everything. They're just not good. But they do a couple of things in a way that I think can be frisky. I've been saying this all week. I will say it until I'm blue in the face. They're going to run the ball successfully against Washington, especially with this D-line now in flux. The John Allen injury hurts. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, problematic without him. I don't think Dorrance Armstrong's going to play, but I guess it's possible that he does. If he does, I'm not sure if he's 100%. So you might have three new defensive linemen over the last week plus that are playing big, big roles. And Carolina was moving the Falcons around in the running game. And Chuba Hubbard is a good player. He is a top 10 running back, I would say, in the NFL. If you look at his last month, he's been excellent. He's run for 114, 104, 97, and 92 yards, and he's averaging 5.6 a pop. So I know they're going to be able to run the ball. I just don't think that that's going to matter that much if they can't make explosives in the passing game and make things happen down the field. And if they don't have Deontay Johnson, good luck. They've already been playing without Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
Their quarterback room was the worst in the league when it was led by Bryce Young. Now it's just kind of regular bad with Andy Dalton making them a more professional operation. But you're going to try to keep up with this team with a bottom five defense in scoring and yards allowed. You're going to try to go tit for tat and, you know, big play for big play with Washington in Washington when you don't have maybe your most talented and dynamic wide receiver. They better have Deontay Johnson available. He got carted down to the field today just to be at practice.
They've given up 34 points or more in four of their six games. In one of those that they didn't, it was a game where the Chargers won 26-3 and could have scored 70 had they felt like it. The Chargers in week two ran for 219 yards. Does that sound familiar to anybody?
A little bit.
So their one win, of course, is Bryce Young gets benched. They play Andy Dalton. Everybody, you know, dead cat bounce. They play the game of the year. They beat the Raiders on the road 36-22. Since then, it's been the other team gets to score a lot, and they score a little. Like, that's what it's been. This sets up very well for Washington. Like, this kind of game, I will take my chances if, basically, because Carolina is just a much worse version of what Washington is, right? Not a good defense. An offense, they can move the ball and score a little bit. Fine. Do your best there. That's a track meet.
Yeah.
We've got four guys that are much faster than your guys. Let's go.
So I know that they played six games and three times they've scored 10 or fewer, but I think you've got to throw out the first 2 weeks of their season, to be honest, in any kind of
eval it was non-competitive
of their offense because Bryce Young gave them no chance. And I don't know what they're going to do. My guess is after the bye, which for them is in week 11, they've got seven games left, and you probably just have to give Bryce Young right now a little pep talk where you say, listen, buddy, we're coming out of the bye week in week 12 against the Chiefs. Your time starts then, and you will have every game from then until the end of the year. We will see if you're the guy or not, because we're going to be picking really, really high again.
Yeah, good luck to you, because it's Chiefs and Bengals. I mean, it's Chiefs and Buccaneers right out of the bye week.
Yeah.
But enjoy. But yeah,
if
I mean, seriously, that's what you do.
They could start him against the Saints and the Giants if they want a softer landing spot.
No, but I'm with you.
The point is, though, eventually you got to go back to him, because what really are you doing?
Right.
You're playing Andy Dalton. You're better. Obviously, your O-line, your wide receivers, you get better evaluations of those guys. They benefit from his presence. But winning two or three more games and getting to five instead of something embarrassing like one or two, so what? All you did is lost a few draft spots, and Andy Dalton is not your answer.
Right.
If he's there, he's a backup next year. If he's gone, then you never see him again.
Yeah, 99.9% of the time, I go, there's no point in being 1-5. I'd rather be 0-6 with a kid quarterback. 99.9% of the time.
It's so bad.
Those first 2 weeks were so non-competitive, I break my rule for that. Right. So it's a rule most of the time. Unless it's something like that where I don't have another term for it other than they were non-competitive. Like, it was the most basic fundamental pass that, like, my six-year-old son and his buddies are going to try to do this weekend on their flag football game against the 49ers. Big matchup, by the way. If they can't, we can't do that, we can't even have a game.
Well, there's something to, when it gets to a point where it's not fair to the other guys on the field, you got to do something. And I know you and I largely will belittle, especially you, the idea of, like, how do you look the other guys in the face? What do they think? They all know he's not the best player on the roster. You know, you basically say, I don't care. This is about next year, whatever. I'm not as adamant in that regard as you are. I think there's some truth to that, having been in a lot of locker rooms around the NFL. That said, though, it was so bad with Bryce Young, Danny,
yeah,
that it was quite literally not fair,
right,
to the guys bleeding, sweating, blocking, holding up with every ounce in their body to just not get mauled,
mm-hmm,
so that he could not find anyone.
Yeah,
or the receiver that ran the route perfectly and got open.
It was not NFL caliber.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to just hope that he's better when you see him again later this year. But that all said, since the Vegas game, when Dalton helped them score 36 in a 2-touchdown win, they have been a much more professional, just normal bad team. 1-3, nothing to write home about. They only scored 10 against the Bears. That's a really good defense. Otherwise, they've scored 24-20 against Cincy and Atlanta in losses. But they're normal, not embarrassing. You need to play well and protect the football, or they can hang around kind of bad. And that would be what I would say to Washington this week is protect the football.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to play an A game. Play a B or C game. And don't beat yourself, and you're going to beat them. You give them a chance if you fumble the ball all over the place. You don't take them seriously. You're dropping
passes.
Commit
your penalties, yeah, et cetera.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
and you win.
They move the ball. Again, this is... One is the dead cat bounce sample, the first game with Andy Dalton, but they moved it for 440 yards against the Raiders.
Dude, they were so good that day.
Yeah, followed up against Cincinnati. Now, we all know Cincinnati's defense is atrocious on stilts, but still, so is Washington's, moved it for almost 400 yards of offense in that game, in what ended up being a 10-point loss when they lost that shootout to Burrow and company. That's kind of the blueprint for me. Not a little bit less because, you know, Burrow and company, they want to sling it, but a team that... Yeah, you put up a fight for a little while, but we all know, right? As you don't have quite enough gears, not enough horses to match one of these really good offenses that's going to, you know, fire up and down the field at will, and that's what Washington should be able to do to a bad team. That, to me, is a big deal, by the way. I was talking to my wife about this, where she actually was asking me, like, how good is Washington really? Like, what do you actually think, you know, after they lost to the Ravens this past week? And I'm going, they're past the threshold of... They can take a team that isn't very good, that's going to pick in the top 10, and beat the bleep out of them. Like, that's better than it's been. And that's not everything. That doesn't mean you're a Super Bowl contender. It doesn't mean there's no parade for that. There's no ring. But that feeling of comfort and confidence that comes from, yeah, they're better, I'll take my chances, is a major step forward.
Who is going to step up on defense with John Allen out? I want to get into that next here on Grant and Danny, and we can open up the phones for you at 800-636-1067. A lot of injuries on that defensive line. One of the key players over the years defensively, John Allen's going to be out for the year. What defender do you think steps up starting this weekend, elevates their game, and really carries this defense? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live on G&D, you're listening to The Fan. Phones are open, 800-636-1067. It's a Thursday before a Commanders home game over in Landover, Maryland. I think it's going to be a fun environment on Sunday, by the way. You've got homecoming, number one, which always leads to a ton of former great players coming back. Spices up the environment. You've got Darryl Green's jersey retirement and all of the hoopla that's going to come with that. The mayor calling into the station today to say they're giving Darryl Green the keys to the city. He was in studio with the Junkies. If you missed that when we're done, you can grab that at thefandc.com. But honoring one of the greatest players in team history and all of the dignitaries that'll be here from around town and from the organization back in the day to take part in not only his celebration, but the homecoming. You add that to bad team versus good team, which we haven't gotten to say for a long time, heavy favorites at home, and a chance to get to 5-2, and we could be in what is, for the first time, home field advantage territory, where there's a lot of burgundy and gold, and there are a lot of people that are feeling good about themselves at kickoff.
Again, that three-word phrase, foreign around here, data says that, your eyeballs say that, the sound on the broadcast says that, your experience in the stadium says that, used to be a punchline, and it's not. That's again, refreshing. These little milestones, these little individual moments where, you know, just tuning into the game on Sunday, no longer a chore, something people look forward to, et cetera. But those little things I'm not taking for granted yet. There may be a time, you know, like if I want to get to the point where, you know, for like for years before the Caps broke through or the Nats did, where it's like, ugh, another playoff defeat. And like, you're all upset and irritated. That's 1,000 miles away from where we've been only like a year plus ago. Right. So we'll take it for granted just yet, but you're right, man. It is, the momentum is very, very real. This could go a long way just to kind of cementing that. Just again, you put it a little bit more hay in the barn. 5-2. You had a very profound quote last week that 5-1 is different than 4-2, which I thought was just, I was like, whoa, I was blown away. I was like in the Matrix, like dodging bullets, like Neo.
I had to confirm that with some people before I said it because I didn't want to get in trouble.
Well, it's like, it's a philosophy. It's a lifestyle. But in all sincerity, you get to 5 wins now before the halfway point of the season. You are now just, you can be middling the rest of the way. No one will notice. You know what I mean? You could just be okay and you still have plenty of wins. You'll end up at 9 or 10 just because you got to 5 before you got to 8 total games played. I don't know if that math made sense, but it goes such a long way to your home fans seeing you win, and they'll have done that a few times now.
Yeah, the best way I can describe it is I'm excited to be at the game. It has been a long time since on a Thursday I was legitimately looking forward to going to a game. And that's where we are. I've always gone to the games. Now, it's not a, hey, the game's on Sunday.
It's not due to your work.
No, it's not a have to. It's a get to. I am excited to go cover the game on Sunday. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to that as it pertains to the work that you put in as fans. The money you're spending on a babysitter, let alone the seats and the food and the drinks and whatever time you're sinking into in terms of tailgating and, you know, being tired the next day, dragging because you were drinking and hanging out all day, or whatever it is. You used to do that because it was part of the routine. Now it's something you look forward to doing, maybe a little bit more, which I like. But let's get to the defensive line and the defense. So John Allen's out for the year, and it looks like at least 1 month without Javonte Jean-Baptiste, and maybe a game we'll see without Dorrance Armstrong, although good news today was it seemed like he was down around the practice field getting some work in. Who is going to step up on defense moving forward? That's the question at 800-636-1067. Who do you anticipate breaking out for the rest of this year and really carrying more weight than they have?
So the easiest answer is the other guy that's been a Pro Bowler, or the other guy that's making a ton of money on this defensive line. But I'm going to leave that because to me, this might be super hipster. This might be stupid. In fact, Grant, you could probably play this audio and you could mock me later on, not too far down the line. But I feel like there's going to be an opportunity for Jamin Davis to get on the football field. And I've been critical of him in the past as a linebacker, mostly because of I thought it was a terrible pick that Rivera and the Martys made. But that's water under the bridge. He's here. I think as somebody that's explosive, fast, and can get upfield, there's a use for that. Now, it may not be every down. You may not want him fighting, you know, tackles or pulling guards or get, you know, a double team by tight ends and tackles. But to me, in a passing situation, and there'll be plenty of those, he could be someone that could help them. So that's my answer. He's been inactive. He's been, you know, a non-factor for a little bit. I got Jamin Davis all of a sudden having a role going forward.
I do not dislike that one at all. I want to go back to Daron Payne, though, because first and foremost, before we talk about guys that have to now start making an impact or that are getting more playing time or the role elevates and you become a starter, you do, you said it's kind of an easy answer, a cliche. You need Deron Payne to play like a big boy here. He makes all of the money.
Yeah.
He is 27 years old. He's going to be the foundational building block on the interior of this D-line moving forward in life without John Allen, presumably, if Allen's not back next year. The only thing they could do is bring Allen back, even though there's no guaranteed money, and maybe flip Deron Payne if they feel like that there's trade value there, depending on his season. But he had 11.5 sacks a couple years ago. And I'm not going to use sacks as the end-all, be-all. But
it passed the eye test, man. He was a force.
No, he was a beast. That year, he had 20 quarterback hits. Mm-hmm. Last year, he had 11.
Mm-hmm.
This year, through six games, he has two.
Yep.
He is on pace right now to hit the quarterback essentially like six or seven times. Now, the 20 quarterback hits in his career year, which was his contract year, by the way, when he had 11.5 sacks, that is an all-pro caliber season. That is a fringe dominant, one of the best players in the league kind of year when you hit the quarterback 20 times as a D-tackle and you have right around a dozen sacks and almost 70 tackles. That is some really impressive water you're swimming in. But that was the only year he ever had like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back because we get more wrong than we get right.
You're right about this. I was wrong.
But the reason I did not want to pay him that crazy amount of money is, number one, I just have a rule that I don't pay guys who have one great year in their contract year that look nothing like the rest of their career. And in the years before, 11.5 sacks, Payne had 5, 2, 3, and 4.5. Then he had 11.5 in a contract year. Tackles for loss for his career, 6, 3, 7, 6, and 18. Which one was the contract year? Quarterback hits, 8, 4, 8, 15, 20. Which one was the contract year? He was just a different player. But it is time right now where you really need him to start looking like he did going back to that breakout 2022 season. That's not that much of an ask.
Right.
For a guy who's one of the highest paid in the league at his position.
Now, again, there may be some things we don't know. What's he being asked to do? Did his role change? Is he now supposed to take on double teams?
Well, he's at a position where you're going to take on doubles.
Yeah.
But 6 weeks at a time is a pretty good sample to say, hit the quarterback more than twice.
And that's where I was going. Yeah. I mean, to me, this is pretty clear cut. Like, you get, at the time, close to the top of the market money, please behave like it on the field. And this isn't to rip him. It's not like he's screwing around off the field and kicking his feet up and not doing his job. But when you pay someone big money, you need big money production.
The example I'll give on, you can be really good without counting stats. The first two sacks of the season for Washington, they had one in week one and one in week two, was Cleveland Farrell. And Cleveland Farrell got both of those sacks on pain plays, where the best play was made by Payne.
Mm-hmm.
He won the play.
Right.
He blew it up.
Disrupted, quarterback moved, and there you
quarterback
go.
Quarterback kind of runs into Cleveland Farrell, and he has two sacks. And on neither of those two plays am I overly impressed with him. The takeaway when you watch that play is, damn, Deron Payne's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what a beast. And so there are plenty of those. I'm not saying there aren't. This is not me saying he has played badly. Don't mishear me. What I am saying is there's a lot more room here for him to go out and be the premier player on this defensive line and one of the really good players on the defense. And he's mostly been very quiet so far. You don't pay him what you pay him to be quiet. And at this point, John Allen not being there only means that you just need more out of him. That's all.
I need one of those, I overtalk about it, but that Denver series, Deron Payne first down, Deron Payne second down, Deron Payne third down, punt. You know what I mean? Where just, oh my God, that guy's unblockable.
Yeah, first down, TFL. Second down, stop at the line of scrimmage by himself. Now it's 3rd and 11, and he gets home for a sack or hits the quarterback as he throws for an incompletion.
He's like, 10 guys could have just taken the time off, just sat down on the field, crisscross applesauce because 94 is out there.
On that drive, you had him, so nothing else matters.
Yeah, so that's, of course, unrealistic every down. Nobody does that, not even the best players in the game. But the occasional streak of dominance, the occasional big play happening, the occasional disruption, drive stalling type plays haven't really been there near as often enough for my taste.
So this will sound like way too simplified, but he does better things and plays at a higher level and is noticeable in doing those things when you study it more than just an average defensive tackle, whoever that is. Let's just say Fidarian Mathis. But it shouldn't be that big of an ask that you hear his name called more than Sheldon Day.
Mm-hmm.
Or any of those other D-tackles. The disruptive plays is what he gets paid for, respectfully. I mean, the taking on double teams and some of the stuff you can do quietly without your number getting called, your name getting said on the broadcast, that's important too. But the guys that get all the money, look at the D tackles getting paid what he gets paid. You hear those names called constantly, over and over and over again, by making the plays. The other name I'll give you, because you went off the board with like a deeper cut, you said Jamin, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
This one won't be a surprise, but I am such a big believer in this kid that I want it to happen right here and right now. And I don't think he's all the way back yet. I don't get the sense that he is the same player right now that he was the day he played his final down in college. I think there's still some like rehab and development, even though he's healthy. But Johnny Newton, 22 years old, only 47 days of being 22 years old, by the way. He's a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Newton, who they drafted essentially in the first round, 36th overall. That's four picks after a guy that was taken in round one. You're about to get a lot more work, more snaps, more reps, an opportunity to be a factor every single week. He has only played defensively in 38% of snaps. That's about to go up by 12 or 14%, I would guess.
At least you think, yeah.
Go make plays, kid. Mm-hmm. He had one play against the Ravens where he shedded the center, it was good, and he made Derrick Henry basically cut, jumps on him and grabs him, pulls him to the ground individually right at the line of scrimmage for like a loss of a half yard. Those are great. The more of those, the better in the run game. But I want to see him getting up the field and rushing the quarterback. That's what he did at Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Just or anything, even if it's, again, even if it's not the quarterback sack, that's like the ultimate, right?
Yeah, but just push the pocket
but
and
push
create
the pocket.
Penetration.
You don't allow the quarterback to step up or make him, you know, disrupt the rhythm and timing. You get your hands up. Again, I with all the short passing in the NFL, and it's happened to Jaden Daniels a couple times, I feel like Washington never bats passes down. Now, maybe that's my own, you know, bias against it, but I feel like that's such a disruptive play, you know, where you force someone to have to wait an extra tick to go around the window that you're creating or that you're eliminating because your arms are up in the air, for example. Things like that. Those can be disruptive enough. Draw some holding penalties. Be a problem. And that's ultimately what you're looking for, right, from a highly drafted or highly compensated defensive lineman. The sacks are wonderful. Those are the ones you see. That's the highlight, especially defensive end comes firing around the edge and the tackle can't keep up with him trying to slide and pass protect and he bends like he's going around a motorcycle turn and he hits the quarterback. Those are the glamour ones. You can picture all the stars who have done that over the years, the Bruce Smiths, the Derek Thomases, the Lawrence Taylors, everybody in between. But down in and down out, not letting them do what they want to do, and you know what I mean? Like everyone else is dependent. Safeties, linebackers, corners, you're kind of dependent on what the offense is doing. You have to wait for them to come to you and sort of figure it out. At that defensive line spot, especially if you get the right down and distance, you just go ruin it. You go bother them. You go disrupt the timing, and even that can be invaluable.
We'll take the calls that you are lining up on this right now at 800-636-1067. Who is going to step up on this defense? Plus, I saw a sports tradition I had never heard about today that takes place every single year in a city, and it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I love it so much. I've never heard about this, and I don't know if anybody else has. It's kind of under the radar. I want to talk about that next as soon as we return. Grant and Danny on the Fan. With Danny Ruye, I'm Grant Paulson. This is The Fan. So before we get to the phones on the Commanders, I tease this. I want to pay this off real quick. Have you ever heard of a tradition in Pittsburgh where Pirates fans all get together every year on the exact same day, and it's October 13th, to celebrate the anniversary of 1960 when Bill Mazeroski hit the greatest home run in, you could say baseball history. It was a Game 7 World Series winning home run, but certainly in Pirates history. But they go to the location where their old ballpark was. It's like in this random little park, basically this street corner under some trees. And every year on the same day, they bring these huge speakers and they blare the home run call from 1960. And all these Pirates fans in Mazeroski jerseys and their gold and the black, they stand there to celebrate the anniversary in Pittsburgh every single year with the speakers blaring, and then they all clap and hug and then go home. Isn't that awesome?
That's incredible.
I don't know if this will pick up. I got this off of Instagram. They're all just cheering, you know. They're like steamed up for the call. And they just play it right off the radio.
And they're all like, yay.
They all cheer. And then they all just kind of go home.
Most of those people were not alive.
I think probably. That to me would be the equivalent of in like 50 years, Capital One Arena, it won't be in Virginia.
Come on. Stop being funny.
But
come
there's
on.
Another Seriously, building somewhere in D.C. where the Caps play, and we all go to 7th Street, and someone plays John Walton's call of Yevgeny Kuznetsov's goal. Or we all walk over to the banks of the Anacostia where old Nats Park was in the Navy Yard, and we all stand there and we listen to the Juan Soto hit against the Brewers, and then we all high-five and then go back to work. I just think it's the best thing I've ever heard.
Or, you know, the radio call of 4th and 1, hand it off to Riggo. You know what I mean? Like in 7-8 years from now. But that's 1960. That's incredible. That's 64 years ago. Sports. I just did my quick math, man. How about that? I also feel bad that Pirates fans haven't had that much to cheer about since then.
No, you got to throw it back to 60 if you want to celebrate,
yeah,
probably.
That's the tough stuff.
That was a moment. And that has not happened since. Game 7, decisive walk-off home run. Can't beat it. Let's go to Shane in D.C. Who's going to step up on the Commanders' defense with the injuries on the D-line?
Hey, Commander Daddy Grant. How y'all doing today?
Good, buddy.
I mean, obviously it's Deron Payne, but, I mean, that's because we're paying him the money. And, look, he came in here as a high draft pick, and now that Jonathan Allen's out, which that injury is going to hurt. That what you see down the road, that injury is going to hurt this team. Not only that, just because of what he brings to the locker room. But outside that, it's got to be St. Juice. Like, we got to have somebody step up in the secondary. Our secondary is absolutely garbage right now. As you saw against the bottom, Lamar Jackson looked like Peyton Manning out there. And the thing about it was, I don't know what we got to do in the secondary, but it's got to be St. Juice right now. For me, Deron Payne's the obvious pick, but you got to have somebody step up in the back.
St. Juice has been their best corner. I mean, pretty decidedly at this point. They have moved Mikey Sanders still out of the nickel outside, and they are now playing Igbinoghene in the nickel, and both of them have been fine, but they're not asking a ton out of those guys. St. Juste is the one that they're saying, hey, number one, you got him, let's go. And that's just not a fair ask. I'll go back to what I call the old Reed Doughty assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Reed Doughty's playing in 13 games. It's not his fault.
And he does not deserve any blame for being Reed Doughty.
You paid him to play special teams.
Yeah.
You signed him to play special teams. He was the fifth safety when camp began. It's not his problem that every single year he ends up starting 13 games. Don't blame Stephon Heyer for being Stephon Heyer. You hired me. I walked through the door. I think that's kind of how I feel about BSJ, who is a third-round pick, who is long and physical and around the ball for the most part, and who is probably a solid corner two.
A decent player, yeah, for sure.
But they're asking him to be a corner one. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, he's not going to win even as a corner two, corner three, against smaller, speedier wide receivers all the time. Zay Flowers is not going to be a good matchup
for again,
him.
More in fairness to him, a lot of guys are going to struggle with that now with the current rules, right? Sure. Like the smaller, quicker receiver is back in vogue. You can't get handsy all that often anymore. Like the Legion of Boom days where you can clutch and grab and just, you know, realize that they're not going to throw a flag every time, that's long gone.
Great corners could have held up well in that situation against Baltimore where you put a bunch of guys in the box. Like some of those Zay Flowers plays you remember, mm-hmm, where he catches the ball crossing the field, hits the brakes, St. Juice can't get him down, he, mm-hmm, kind of goes forward for another 5 or 7. Go back and watch that play. To say he's on an island is not even really fair. He's the only guy on that half the field. Now he's chasing a speed guy across the entire field. There's 5 to 7 corners in the league that are going to consistently do that at a high level. That's not an easy assignment. But I get it. You're saying someone in the corner room, someone in the secondary has got to be better. And he's probably the most talented guy.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the ask. Gary, Fairfax, who on defense do you want to step up post John Allen here?
G&D, what's up, fellas?
Hey, dude.
Danny, you're a funny dude.
Well, thank you, sir.
Hey, Grant, I'm 100% with you, man. I've been so disappointed with, really, I don't want to bag on a guy to be hurt, but Allen and Payne in the Cincinnati game, I can't remember if it was Troy Aikman or Joe Buck, but they called him out. He said, you know, the two All-Pros, we haven't heard from them. Haven't heard their name called. And it's pretty much been the, that's pretty much been the story all season. I just haven't heard their names called. And so I'm going to hope, I really am going to hope, that as a tribute to his running mate, now that he's out for the season, that Deron Payne will take it upon himself to say, look, I'm going to show these people who I am and who I can be. Because I don't want to hear excuses about being double-teamed on all these different plays. He's not Aaron Donald. Nobody's double-teaming him every snap. So, and even Aaron Donald may play.
Well, I will tell you this,
there are opportunities to be played.
Aaron Donald is getting double-teamed on every snap. Sometimes you just beat it. You know, sometimes that means the rest of the defense should be really, really good.
Offenses know where Dexter Lawrence is. 7.5 sacks this year. You know what I mean? Like, they're people are familiar with his works.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're the top of the scouting report. You got to do something, man.
I need you right now. Yep. More than I've needed you all season, I need you this weekend against Carolina. See that guy with the red hair and the football in his hand? Go hit him. Mm-hmm. You've hit two quarterbacks twice all season. That's the count. Two QB hits, according to PFR. I want you to go hit that guy twice as many times as that this week. Let's figure this out together. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's kick off next hour with a conversation on the Bengals stadium. You're saying why? Well, supposedly they want to add a dome to what is a really beautiful stadium. We were just there. It seems like we're trending towards stadiums all having domes moving forward in the NFL. And one day, supposedly, we might have a new stadium here, so that seems related to us. We'll get into that as we continue on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.